Small business owners are always passionate about their work, and they have a lot on the line. Let Verizon help champion your small business dream. Whether you own a small business or scaling one or starting one from scratch, you need Verizon Small Business Days. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon Business Experts for small business support. During Verizon Small Business Days, you can receive a free tech check with a one-on-one meeting with a Verizon Business Expert. Plus, Verizon Business Experts will provide you with personalized advice and solutions that are tailored to your specific small business needs. Take advantage of special offers and deals during Verizon Small Business Days and get more for your business. Verizon has your back. Don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/small business.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people want to make friends, I'm just trying to make some money. My job is not just to entertain, but to educate and teach, put it in context. So call me at 1-800-743-CNBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. What made today so tough? Dow sinking 84 points. S&P losing 0.67%. But the Nasdaq plunging a whopping 1.46%. It's simple. There are fewer and fewer stocks that can be safely bought because we're trying to figure out whose estimates will now need to be cut and how deep those cuts will be. That's the new normal until the trade war with China reaches some kind of resolution. Unfortunately, we have no idea when that might happen. People in this country are just starting to realize that President Trump has had it with the Chinese. He has no desire to continue negotiating, even if they want to come to the table. By the way, the Chinese have been saying that, and it's like, wow, like, is it really that shocking? In the meantime, lots of money is being lost by investors. They keep being surprised by our government's willingness to take the pain from the trade war.
House of pain.
Nobody's surprised when the People's Republic of China is willing to take some pain. After all, it's not like they can be voted out of office. The Communist Party is perfectly willing to inflict some hardship on its own people if that furthers the long-term goals. And hey, when you consider that they've been able to lift, say, hundreds of millions of people out of poverty, maybe that's not a bad thing. However, that's never been the American way. Even when our government is fine inflicting hardship on individuals, it's always been solicitous of big business. Not to be too cynical here, but there was a time when it would have been unthinkable for the president to damage our own semiconductor companies in order to wreck a Chinese company like Huawei. Consider those losses ever since the president banned component sales to one of the largest handset and telco infrastructure makers on earth. Let me peel them down. It's pretty amazing. Micron's fallen from 43 to 34. That's a popular stock. Broadcom from 318 to 272. Xilinx, wow, that was red hot, right? From 119 to 101. Texas Instruments, 117 to 104. Qualcomm, smoking hot 89 to ice cold 76. Analog Devices, 116 to 97. Intel, 51 to 43. And Skyworks Solutions, a great company, from 91 to 68. That is an astonishing amount of pain to inflict on U.S. companies in order to make a statement that we're not going to let Huawei get ahead of us in the race for 5G. Some of these chip makers get 15% of their sales from Huawei. This is a big deal to shut them down from this account. We also learned that Alphabet's cutting off support to Huawei for its Android hardware and software. Hard to believe Huawei can continue to be the fastest growing cell phone maker in the world without Android. Of course, this wasn't good news for Alphabet either, down $24 on the news after we just had a lot of analysts speak positively about it last week. Speaking of 5G, the FCC is going to bless T-Mobile's merger with Sprint, even though a 4-into-3 merger is inherently anti-competitive, because it's the only way these smaller wireless providers can compete with AT&T and Verizon in 5G. Of course, the deal still needs approval from the Justice Department, and it's possible it will be blocked, because even with both companies promising not to raise prices for 3 years, a 4-into-3 merger is a very tough sell. If Justice does approve it, it will be because the president wants America to dominate in 5G. And you know what? I got to tell you, it is so important to him. Stranger things have happened. And when you think about it, it's pretty amazing that we have a policy on 5G wireless technology. Not unlike China. We have one. It's incredible. You rarely see this kind of coordination on a single issue across multiple agencies, unless we're at war with another country. We know the Chinese are going to retaliate for what Trump did to Huawei. And I don't mean blocking out the last episode of Game of Thrones, which they did last night. Talk about spiteful. Can you imagine if we tried to do that here? There'd be riots in the streets. Although apparently the finale was awful. I mean, so maybe the Chinese government did their people a favor. No, the stock market signaling that China's real retaliation will be a strike against Apple. Even though their technology ecosystem only employs over 2 million Chinese people. Oh, the stock got hit again today, down nearly $6. It's been hammered relentlessly since the latest escalation, even as China hasn't said a thing about the company. Still, I can't blame anyone for being nervous. I mean, Apple could be in the crosshairs. And they might get it from both ends. My understanding is that the White House wants Apple to move its production out of China. They don't care about Apple's earnings beyond the fact that Trump doesn't want to see the Dow Jones Industrial Average get hit too hard, and Apple's a big part of that index. Of course, it's not just Apple. Many of our companies are starting to get anxious about these higher tariffs. 25% is a much bigger deal than 10%. Nike and Adidas, along with 171 other apparel makers and retailers, wrote the president today calling the tariffs catastrophic for our consumers and our companies and the American economy as a whole, end quote. The group practically begs him, saying, quote, on behalf of our hundreds of millions of footwear consumers and hundreds of thousands of employees, we ask that you immediately stop this action to increase their tax burden, end quote. They point out that Trump's proposal to slap tariffs on all imports from China is effectively a sales tax on the American consumer. They want the trade war to end. Under any other administration, this is the kind of letter that might actually have a real impact on policymaking. It's certainly what China was counting on, but they didn't count on alternative facts. We have a president who believes that China's the one paying the tariffs, China. And he's convinced millions of Americans that this is just free money. He's out there arguing that the best way to close the budget deficit is still more tariffs. And companies like Nike and Under Armour are just a bunch of crybabies. The truth is that tariffs are a sales tax on you, the consumer, but this is a post-truth presidency. Get used to it. That letter from the apparel industry continues. There have been suggestions that industries should quickly shift sourcing to countries other than China in the wake of these additional tariff threats. While our industry has been moving away from China for some time now, footwear is a very capital-intensive industry with years of planning required to make sourcing decisions, and companies cannot simply move factories to adjust to these changes, end quote. Basically, you can't move your factories overnight, and this is going to really hurt many players in the apparel space, although to some extent you need to keep in mind these executives are talking their own book. Finally, these apparel CEOs warn of long-term lasting effects on American individuals and families, as well as threats to, quote, the very economic viability of many companies in our industry, end quote. Now, I can see the president reading this and laughing at it. He has no sympathy for these companies. See, to them, they're the ones that took the jobs out of the United States in the first place. Why didn't they think about this? Worst case, they move their manufacturing somewhere else and their earnings take a hit. It's not the end of the world. He doesn't care about earnings per share. He's different from the previous presidents. Besides, he lives in a universe where the Chinese are the ones who pay the tariffs, so no one here gets hurt. Bottom line, look, I took Econ 101. I know the tariffs are taxed on us, but as long as President Trump believes the Chinese are the ones who pay the price, he's going to keep taking a hard-line approach to these negotiations, and that means your portfolio has to have as little exposure to China as possible until this mess at last gets resolved. I'm going to Andrew in Connecticut. Andrew!
Hey, Jim.
Andrew.
I'm an architect. Buying and selling stocks isn't my forte, and I could use your help.
Sure.
In 2017, I bought my first stock, Tesla, for $357. Today it's 205. Yeah. I believe in the company. Should I stick with it, or do you recommend something else?
Okay, if you believe in the company, I'm not going to talk you out of it. If you like the company and you like the car and you can look at a balance sheet, and you follow our coverage and you still like it, then you know what? You should own it. But it's important that you do all those things before you decide to own it. Jonathan in Texas. Jonathan.
Hello, Jim. Booyah from San Antonio.
How there you go. Doing? What's up?
Yeah, well, Jim, regarding 3M, there's recently been chatter about a possible cut in the dividend. Do you think the dividend is in jeopardy, and do you think a cut has been priced into the stock?
I do not think that they're going to have to cut their dividend. I think that they would do – they have the, one of the best dividend records of all time. That would not be their style. The stock got overvalued. It does have a 3.4% yield. I've been trying to figure out where I can say we're at the bottom, but it still sells at 17 times earnings, so it's still too expensive. Hey, let's go. That's Minnesota Mining, the old one at least. Let's go to Thomas in Minnesota. Thomas.
Thank you for your help.
Of course.
For helping us out, Mr. Kramer. When leaving for school this morning, my boys called it Mad Money Monday.
Yes.
Calling about Yeti. Calling about Yeti. It was at 36.60 and closed today at 25.33 with no catalyst. Is there any reason for the sell-off?
No, it should, maybe shouldn't have gotten to 36, but I think you should buy this. This is a great company. Maybe you buy some here for your kids, and then if it goes down to 22, 23, look at it as an opportunity to buy more. We studied this company 9 ways to Sunday, and we really and truly believe in it. Let's go to Zach in Indiana. Zach!
Hey, Jim, how are you doing today?
Not bad. How about you?
I'm doing well, thank you. You know, first off, thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
I wanted to get your opinion on Microsoft. I know year-to-date we've seen the company's stock price rise around 25%. I know after the first quarter it reported year-over-year total revenue growth of around 14%. Do you think Microsoft can maintain this double-digit revenue?
All right. I actually had the discussion with Jeff Marks and Zeb Fema this morning, who work with me at ActionAlertsPlus.com, the club. And I was saying, wow, you know what? This stock has moved up so much. But we all agreed it's such a good company that if you just own it for a while, it's okay that it moved this much. In other words, I believe in Microsoft and Satya Nadella. All right, it is tough out there, but one thing is certain. Stay away from stocks that have direct exposure to China. On Mad Money Tonight, China's Starbucks has arrived on Wall Street, but should you consider shares of Luckin Coffee? I'll tell you what's brewing just ahead. Then, after a week in San Francisco covering all things tech, I learned a thing or two about the social media sector. Tonight, I'm offering up a power rankings of some of the hottest plays. And the next Grand Theft Auto is on the horizon. So what does it mean for Take-Two? I'm talking with the CEO. So stay with Kramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Sometimes I gotta wonder if the stock market is truly a learning animal. Last Friday, something incredibly bizarre happened. After a week of broken IPO dreams and heightened trade tensions with China, we got another Chinese IPO. And it seems like people haven't been listening to the WHO because they got fooled again. I'm talking about Luckin Coffee, which now trades under the symbol LK. This is a rapidly growing Chinese coffee chain. Rapidly is a too soft a word for what they're doing. And as I've told you many times before, Chinese companies that come public here in the U.S., they tend to be pretty bad investments, especially right out of the gate. Sure enough, the Luckin Coffee deal price is 17, then the stock spiked up to 25. Ooh, I gotta buy some at the opening, for rallying less than a buck, and then going right back down, closing at just above $20. If you bought this thing at the open, you got crushed. Oh, and the stock keeps getting hammered. Down another 8.7% to $18 today. But just in case you're tempted now that it's pulled back, I want to explain to you precisely why I think you should avoid the stock of Luckin Coffee and others like it. On the one hand, oh, come on, I see the appeal. Luckin is now China's second largest coffee network and by far the fastest growing. They have a technology-driven business model where you do everything via the mobility app, no cashiers, allowing them to serve more customers. The pitch, Luckin gives you convenient, affordable, high-quality coffee. And this company has been growing like a weed with it, actually like kudzu. I mean, I don't know, like something that Monsanto, oh, never mind. Within 18 months, Luckin has expanded from a single trial store in Beijing, one, to 2,370 stores across 28 cities at the end of March. In the first quarter, their store count grew by 717% year over year. It's an eightfold increase. The average items they sell per month jumped by 3,241% year over year. This is spectacular steroidal growth, people. Clearly, there's a demand for quality coffee chain that isn't Starbucks. And this industry is still in its early innings because coffee penetration in the People's Republic is still very low. On a per capita basis, they drink 1.6% of the coffee that we do. Some people say that they only drink, I don't know, they drink 3 cups a year or something. The numbers are really staggering. I like this chart. So it sure seems like Luckin has been, let's just say, an incredible opportunity. Luckin the company. And when you drill down into the numbers, they're spectacular. In fact, these figures are so amazing that they are kind of hard to process. How do you account for the fact that this thing had 3,594% revenue growth in the first quarter? Holy cow. And look, that's a deceleration from 336,178% growth they had last year. But you have to understand this kind of growth is inherently unsustainable. Luckin's growth really is spectacular. They've grown from a single store to more than 2,000 stores in less than 2 years. When you have an insanely fast rollout, you get jaw-dropping growth numbers like I just mentioned. For a while there, they were opening a new store every 3.5 hours. Which begs the question, why doesn't every company do this? I mean, you got a good concept. Why not take it from a local chain to a regional chain to a national chain overnight? Well, because history is littered with the remains of restaurants and retailers that tried to expand too rapidly and ended up destroying themselves. They're like Icarus, okay, or at least laying to waste their investors' portfolios. For example, if you chase revenue growth nonstop, you can end up sacrificing profitability. Luckin had an operating loss of $78.5 million in the first quarter, and while that's an improvement from $125 million operating loss in the same period last year, it's not great. Using the Chinese currency figures, their operating margin has gone from negative 190% last year to negative 110% in the latest quarter. Ah, progress, sure, but these guys are a long way from turning a profit. The real red flag, though, is Luckin's cash flow statement. In the first quarter, their operating cash flow, the cash generated by regular business operations, came in at negative $93.5 million. If they keep burning cash at that pace, they will go through the money they raised in last week's IPO in less than 2 years. And that's why the stock's really going down. You see, going from nothing to over 2,000 stores in a couple years, I'm calling that a very risky proposition. You're wagering that you've got the business model nailed and you don't need to adapt anything to new locations. You're betting that most of these new stores will be successful and not money losers. But in order to make an educated guess about what will work, you need data, the kind of data you can only get by running your stores over a longer period of time. And that's why companies that expand too rapidly tend to get into a lot of trouble. I want you to contrast Luckin with Starbucks. Now, Starbucks is the number one coffee chain in China, okay? Unlike Luckin, their Chinese operations, they are profitable, actually hugely profitable. And while Starbucks is growing quickly, they're still taking their expansion at a reasonable and responsible pace. That's nowhere near the growth we saw from Luckin. When I communicated with Howard Schultz, the former chairman and CEO of Starbucks last week, who pretty much built the company from the ground up, he told me that Luckin Coffee reminded him of the cardinal sin of all restaurants, reminded him of Boston chicken. Boston chicken. Wow, what a flame out. Now, obviously, Schultz is not a disinterested third party, but I have to admit I had the exact same thought that he did. Boston chicken was a total market darling in the mid-1990s, came public with a bang in 1993 because there were lines outside the door, and the stock exploded higher because the company was generating spectacular growth, but opening new stores in a truly insane pace. They were opening them next to each other. I remember this. By 1998, people had soured on the concept. It became clear they'd expanded way too fast, and Boston chicken declared bankruptcy. Starbucks, by contrast, has been succeeding in China for years, and their Chinese locations have great store-level economics. They haven't even been hurt by nationalistic fervor ginned up by the trade war, although if Beijing decides to hit them with a boycott to punish the United States, I mean, of course, it could hurt. But for now, Starbucks is doing incredibly well in the People's Republic. Most recent quarter CEO Kevin Johnson told us that they opened 553 new stores in China over the previous 12 months, 17% increase. They continue to achieve best-in-class profitability and returns on those investments. That said, again, in the unlikely event that Starbucks gets hit with some sort of boycott, I'd still be very hesitant to recommend Luckin. Why? Because of the 31 Chinese IPOs that hit the U.S. market last year, 23 of them have lost you money from where their deal's priced. 23. 24 have lost money from their first trade. The average return down 22% from its first day close. Those are terrible odds, people. And the Chinese IPOs from the class of 2019 have fared even worse. When are they going to stop pumping this darn stuff out? Luckin Coffee seems to be just following the exact same pattern. Big initial spike, followed by rapid sell-off. And even down here, I wouldn't be a buyer. It's just way too risky, bottom line. Unless we're talking about a terrific company with a tried and true track record, you need to be very careful about Chinese IPOs, because this cohort has been very tough to own. As for Luckin Coffee, if I saw this kind of business model anywhere else, it would be the red flag I threw earlier. It just screams over expansion. In a Chinese coffee chain, hard pass. Stick with Kramer.
Coming up, it takes two, baby. Kramer says game on to the chief of Take-Two Interactive when Mad Money returns.
You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Last week, Pinterest got obliterated when I reported a less than stellar quarter right out of the gate. But then we got to know the company a little bit better. Talking to CEO Ben Silberman, he painted a much more bullish picture, and I agree with him. So ever since that interview, I've been wondering, how does Pinterest stack up next to the other big social media players, Facebook, Twitter, Snap, when it comes to future stock performance? And that's why tonight we're rolling out our Mad Money Power Rankings for social media. Put these 4 stocks in context, and we know you like these power rankings because we've seen it in our tweets and in our email. Number 1 is Facebook. This is a company that got hit by a wave of scandals last year. Are they respecting your privacy? Are they selling off your data to bad actors? Do they need to be reined in? Then last July, the company told us it was going to spend a fortune to fix its broken system, and the stock plummeted from $217 to $176 in a single awful session before going still lower. It bottomed at $123 on Christmas Eve. While 2018 was a brutal year for Facebook, 2019 has been much, much better. The stock's currently up nearly 40% year-to-date, back up to 183. Companies reported 2 terrific quarters in a row. Most recently, at the end of April, Facebook delivered a nice top and bottom line beat. Daily active users up 8%, 2.1 billion people using the services on an average day. Even better, total ad impressions were up a staggering 32%. Best of all, after 2 straight upside surprises, we got a sense that Facebook would be just fine. Oh, it still gets rocked by negative headlines from time to time, including a scathing op-ed piece from co-founder Chris Hughes, who called for the company to be broken up and regulated much more aggressively. He has some good points, but as someone who wants stocks to go higher, I don't want to hear them. You want to be a successful investor? Learn how to compartmentalize, please. Still, while Facebook has now pulled back from its latest highs, the stock still sells at just 25 times next year's earnings estimates. That's ridiculous cheap. This is a fabulous company, tarnished reputation in the media, but not with readers or ad customers. If people flee from Facebook over privacy concerns, they tend to switch to Instagram. That's also owned by Facebook. And it's still the best platform around if you want to engage in targeted advertising, which is the name of the game these days. When it comes to digital marketing, this is the most important company on earth because its scale is unparalleled. Hey, throw in WhatsApp, their powerhouse messaging service, and nobody comes close to these guys. As long as Facebook can maintain its user and engagement numbers, this stock will remain the undisputed king of social media. Oh, it also happens to represent the best value in the cohort. Yep, the best-of-breed social media kingpin is also the cheapest of the big social media stocks. That rarely happens. It's a great opportunity. I am sure people are freaking out. You know, it looks like this. I mean, it would be a gift, okay? That's a gift, not a GIF, which is GIF. I know that much. All right, so who holds the number two spot in our power rankings? That happens to be Twitter. While this stock had an epic, no, I'm not talking about the game, epic run from the summer of 2017 to the summer of 2018, with the stock rising from $15 to the mid-40s, since then it's become more of a battleground, one that's been stuck in the 30s for, for months. It's called marking time, people. I've been a huge fan of this stock, and you know, it's not really a shock, right? I mean, for this whole move, because management has worked very hard to turn the business around. Now, I've seen their efforts to remove or bury some of the ugliest material on the platform using, by the way, artificial intelligence. And as a result, Twitter's become a much more pleasant place to spend your time. As a result, their daily average user numbers have been improving, along with their engagement numbers. And now they've gotten religion on monetizing those users. Plus, Twitter increasingly focused on live events. That's really good business. Like sports. I want you to listen to a guy whom I found very impressive when we were in San Francisco last week. His name's Ned Siegel. He's the CFO. Listen to what he told us. I think it's very cool.
For the Women's World Cup, we're going to show every goal as a highlight right after it happens. For Major League Baseball, you can now vote on what player you want to see their at-bats for live on Twitter that evening. So you get to vote, and then you get to watch it.
Amazing. That guy doesn't have nearly the number of followers that Anthony Noto has, his previous CFO. I said that on Twitter, and he blasted me. But we're all fun, because that guy is money. And this stock can be a big one. The efforts are paying off. When Twitter reported its latest quarter in mid-April, the numbers were terrific. Stock caught fire. Company delivered a huge earnings beat. Get this, 37 cents. Wall Street was only looking for 15. On top of that, a solid revenue beat. Total ad engagements were up 23% year over year. Cost per engagement was down 4%. Average monetizable daily active users grew from 120 to 134 million over the same period, even as monthly average users were down slightly. But Twitter insists that the monthly numbers are not important. Their whole platform is geared toward people who use it every day. And I have to tell you, I agree with them. The figures look really good. Again, people are worried. Head and shoulders. I say, would you think a little bit bigger, please? Because this stock could be big in the second half of 2019. On top of that, Twitter still benefits from being President Trump's preferred mode of communication. Oh, and other than Facebook, it's the only social media play that's actually profitable. At 33 times next year's earnings, it's not exactly cheap. But I think it may turn out to be a bargain in retrospect. Number three is very controversial. It's Pinterest, the online vision board turned social media network, with a stock that came public last month. Now, Pinterest didn't have a huge pop right out of the gate, but it rapidly worked its way higher over the following weeks. I told you I liked the story, even though the stock needed to come down before I could recommend buying. Then Pinterest reported last Thursday night. Wall Street was not amused, as you can see. When the company came public, it looked like Pinterest might be on the verge of turning a profit. But after this quarter, it's clear that they're a long way from profitability. Still, their monthly average users were up 22%. Their average revenue per user up 26%. All told, Pinterest had a 54% sales growth. That's outstanding. But why is Pinterest losing so much more money than we expected? Because the company sees a ton of opportunities, so they're investing heavily to grow their business, especially overseas. That's so smart, people. That's what you should do. As CEO Ben Silberman, who I liked very much, told us on Friday, they're focused on the long term, and I think that's the right approach. While the stock isn't what, again, we call cheap, 9.7 times 2020 sales, not sales, you have my blessing to be a small buyer here and get bigger as the stock goes down, because I think this is going to be a long-term keeper. Finally, in fourth place, there's Snap, the parent of Snapchat. When these guys came public in 2017, the stock initially roared higher, and I warned you to stay away. Stay the heck away. I was pretty adamant. Stock peaked a day after the IPO, plummeted from 30 down to 5 late last year as the company reported a series of very disappointing numbers. So far in 2019, though, we've seen some signs of life as the stock's more than doubled from $5.51 to $11.19 as of today. How did it get its groove back? In part, it came down too far too fast for the fourth quarter bear market. So you can see it really just got slugged here. All right. And then in early February, the company reported a better-than-expected quarter. So you can see what happened. Boom. That was the better-than-expected quarter. And management actually had positive things to say about user engagement. It was stabilizing, monetization, improving significantly. Unfortunately, Snap stock caught fire, got a little too ahead of itself. Company reported again in late April. Results were good. Guidance, not perfect. Not bad, just had some hair on it. And when your stock is more than double going into the earnings, anything less than perfection and then perfect results, well, that's going to cause a sell-off. But it's not so bad. It's not. I know that I got too negative on it down here. It seems like these guys have finally gotten their act together. I'm welcoming them to the show, by the way. It'd be great. They don't have the best track record, but they can come back. And like I said, this whole social media end is still working. Bottom line, if you want some social media exposure, here's what you get. You got Facebook, FB, it's number one. Twitter is a distant second. Pinterest, a close third. And then the inconsistent Snap, welcome to the show to tell us why they deserve to be higher in our newfound power rankings. Now I'm going to Sam in Connecticut. Sam!
Jim, big fan. Thanks so much for taking my call, and thanks for everything you do.
My pleasure. Thank you.
My stock is Fortinet, FDNT. I know cybersecurity is a hot topic, but what makes them kind of interesting is they're playing both SD-WAN and wireless as well. Just wanted to get your thoughts.
Look, I like Fortinet. I am not in love with Fortinet. I've got to tell you, we had Proofpoint on last week. I thought Proofpoint was really special with Gary Steele. I think that's a better buy. Let's go to Proofpoint, okay? All right, let me catch you up on the social media situation. Number one is Facebook. Number two is Twitter. Number three is Pinterest. But remember, this is a very good situation. We saw Ben Silverman. We liked it. Snap last. Love having to plead their case on our show. Watch where Mad Money at. Take-Two Interactive has developed some of the biggest titles in the video game industry, from Grand Theft Auto to Max Payne. But with competition in the video game industry heating up, how can the company fend off its competition? I'm going to talk with the CEO. Then how Joe Biden's view on healthcare could help certain stocks shine. I'll reveal the names. And all your calls rapid fire in tonight's edition of the Lightning Round. So stay with Cramer.
Tomorrow, kick off the trading day with Squawk on the Street. Live from Post 9 at the NYSE.
David, there must be a response, a riposte. Even the dog recoiled from this.
Love this.
No, I don't.
Oh, yes, you.
I love him.
Ever since he called it the simulation.
It all starts at 9 a.m. Eastern. The future of gaming is leveling up. For Take-Two, Red Dead was full speed ahead. After the year's biggest release, can this hit maker conquer new worlds for investors?
How can Take-Two Interactive Software, the stock, get its mojo back? Because the company sure has it. The whole video game industry's had a tough time, though, over the past 18 months, plagued by new competition from free-to-play battle royale games that have upended the entire business model. Take-Two had the most successful traditionally published game of 2018, which is Red Dead Redemption 2. And while the stock roared into its October launch, it got hammered quickly afterwards. Stock finally found its footing in late February, and since then it's been on the rise. But it feels like Wall Street doesn't know what to do with this one, hence its 3.5% decline today. When Take-Two reported a solid quarter a week ago, with somewhat cautious guidance, more on that in a moment, the numbers were good enough to send the stock roaring 7% over the next 2 days. Now, though, it's pulling back, and while Take-Two is long-time Cramer fave, boy, has this industry become notoriously difficult to predict. So let's take a closer look with Strauss Zelnick, the chairman and CEO of Take-Two Interactive, to get a better read on the quarter and where this company is headed. Mr. Zelnick, welcome back to Mad Money. Good to see you, Strauss.
Nice to see you, Jim.
All right. You know, there's a couple ways to look at the quarter. One is that someone says your guidance was conservative. Another guy says that you didn't raise enough. And then there's another way, which is that you bought a ton of stock back and you realize that the stock has been marking time while the business has just been getting better and better. I mean, much better and better. Shouldn't I be thinking about that?
I think so. You know, we say that we reserve our capital for three uses: returning capital to the shareholders, supporting organic growth, and potentially supporting inorganic opportunities. When do we buy back stock? When we perceive that there's deep value in the marketplace. Usually we've been right. I think we've almost entirely been right about that, but companies always think their stock is undervalued.
Your net bookings are 47%, but the stock stayed the same. So that means that you're looking at a company that is substantially better than it was a year ago, and yet if the stock's not moving, you really have no choice, I think, but to buy back stock. It's the only thing that is just makes too much sense not to.
Right. We've spent $360 million doing that in the past fiscal year.
And I thought that was terrific. Now, what I think people are hung up on is something that's already maybe passed. They're hung up on Battle Royale. And I get that. And it's very exciting. But we were at NVIDIA last week. Strauss, we saw what you told us. We saw life like a video. You couldn't tell if it was a movie with actual people or if it was math. And if it's math, which it is, I mean, isn't, say, 2022 to 2025 going to be the greatest years ever?
I think it's incredibly exciting, and not just because you'll be able to make interactive entertainment that looks like live action,
right,
but because of all the other things that we're able to do. And I think the story about free-to-play is also exciting because it brings more gamers into the market.
Talk about NBA, you got free-to-play?
Yeah, it's a $130 billion market. It's the most rapidly growing business in the entertainment business. This is all good news.
Okay, let's talk about the most rapidly growing business within entertainment. There's a lot of entertainment companies consolidating. There's a lot of companies that just want one thing, your growth. So how is it possible that you could have some parts of the industry trading wildly up when your growth far exceeds them? Or is that just up to us who don't realize what we have on our hands?
Look, it's very hard to understand the market movements on an intraday basis, as you know much better than I. Our view is, look, our job is to deliver hits, excite consumers, captivate them, engage them, and good things happen.
So, I mean, when you do Red Dead Online, I mean, or do NBA with online, these are things that haven't even been factored in yet in terms of the numbers. That's really next year's business.
Well, it's a big part of this year's business already, and recurrent consumer spending was up meaningfully year over year.
Okay.
It's now 40% of our business, which, you know, used to be 0% of our business. So, and that will continue to grow because consumers now are engaged over the course of the year, not just at the time you have one big release.
Okay, so a buddy of mine owns now a chain of gaming places, and they're for people who are in their young, let's say high single digit kids, okay? And they're training because they think that there's going to be an NCAA scholarship. I'm not talking about the thing that guy Singer did. I'm talking about reality. And they know that what's going to happen is there's going to be Title IX, there's going to be NCAA scholarships. Is this a vision that you share?
Yes.
You do.
Esports are already watched by 250 million people, and 125 million people consider it a primary entertainment vehicle. That's watching people play video games competitively. The NBA 2K League is in its second season. We have 21 teams participating. You know, we're off to the races.
Jensen Huang, the visionary, RTX, who's waiting and wants to touring with you, says that 1 billion people will be gaming when they see that the games are the same as a movie. True?
I think the business will continue to expand. I think that's one reason it will expand.
Okay.
Another reason that you'll want to look at, of course, is streaming technology.
Right.
That's
going
to bring our titles to consumers who don't have boxes and have any kind of device all over the world.
Now, there was a question that I have to admit. Someone said, look, there's this soccer game and they're making $100 per. What's with you, Strauss? Normally I would not be like that to you. I would say, hey, Strauss, soccer's interesting, and how are we doing? But soccer's interesting, how are we doing?
FIFA's doing great. NBA 2K is doing just great. We don't talk about specific dollars per user.
Right.
Because, again, that's actually not our primary concern. Our primary concern is making the best basketball game anyone could make and does make. And then when we do that, consumers show up.
I agree, but people are now starting to nail you with, they want to know what your monthly average users are. Like your Pinterest.
Right.
Are you Pinterest?
We are definitely not Pinterest. and we do, look, we did talk about users being up on NBA 2K year over year. They're up meaningfully, about 13% daily average users. 20% more games are being played in NBA 2K this year than in the prior year. So we give out those statistics when we think they'll be informative.
Okay, your social point, we're happy so far. We like what's happening.
Dragon City and Monster Legends continue to be up.
That was one of those that you pointed out as being a great one.
Yeah, they're up sequentially up in the quarter, which is great. They've just launched Tasty Town. They launched Word Life. We're very optimistic. They have 10 games in development.
Well, that's good. And they could be big.
I hope so.
All right, one last question. There was a man, Robert Smith, who gave scholarships to everyone at Morehouse who graduated, and I thought it was just the greatest story.
Yeah, it's an amazing story.
Can Take-Two give some scholarships to kids to go to college who are winners?
That's a great question, and something we have to think about. We've vastly increased our charitable giving.
I know.
We haven't done that yet. We'll think about it.
It would be an interesting idea.
It is?
All right. That's Strauss Zelnick, Take-Two Interactive, Chairman CEO, TTW. It is by far the best of these games. I understand that the stock has sat there, but I got to tell you, I got a lot of stocks that are down 30, 40%. This is not one of them. Mad Money's back after the break. It is time! It's time for the lightning round! And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Skate? Time for the lightning round! We'll start with William in New York. William!
Hi, Jim. Booyah!
Booyah!
Jim, last week, the CEO of my company bought 1.5 million shares. Also, Phil Miller, a prominent investor in the company, upped his stake.
He's been
with all this insider buying. Should I buy some more? My company is Intextron. XON.
Yeah, as soon as you're Bill Miller, you know it's Intrexon. And Bill Miller has got so many good stocks. I wish he wasn't saddled with this one. This is a loser. Okay, it's a loser, and I don't want to hear about it. I feel bad if you own it, but it's a loser. All right. Fair enough. You said it. Loser. Rick in North Carolina. Rick!
Hey, Jimmy. Booyah. Great to talk to you, man.
Same.
You're the best. I have a stock. The CEO was on your show about a month and a half ago. It's called Iridium. IRDM.
Matt Desch. I thought he did a great job. I like the stock. It's got a niche business that I didn't believe in. I was wrong. He was right. It's a winner. How about we go to Zoe in Virginia? Zoe.
Booyah, Jim. Zoe from the Shenandoah Valley in Virginia here.
Okay.
Love your show. My wife and I look forward to every night.
Oh, that's so nice. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your guidance. I'd also like to give a shout out to an old friend of mine, Bobby in Bonita Springs, Florida.
Okay.
About 2 years ago, Bob started mentoring me on buying stocks. That was the best investment advice anyone could ask for.
Oh, that's nice.
Now I share my investment guidance I get from Mad Money with Bob.
Okay.
Recently, Bob asked me to ask you, Jim, what do you think about Wayfair? Ticker symbol.
Okay, Wayfair, this is a rough market right now, and Wayfair is the kind of stock that's not necessarily the best thing to buy at this moment. I do think the company has tremendous growth, but I'd rather tell Bob that it's Amazon. And let Amazon come down, you buy a little bit at a time. I think that's a better bet. Let's go to David in California. David!
Swami Kramer, I need your help.
Sure.
I'm thinking of buying... Huh?
Huh?
All right. I'm thinking of buying PayPal or Zscaler. What's your recommendation?
I prefer PayPal. I know it's up a lot. I think Dan Shulman's remarkable. I think the stock can come down a couple, but it's hard. It does a hard time coming down. Zscaler? Hey, you know what? How about Zendesk? Okay? I think Zendesk is good, and Zscaler is good, but I like Okta. Okta. Interesting company. All right, let's go to Mark in New York. Mark!
Jim, booyah!
Booyah!
So, Jim, I have a question about Zenerba Pharmaceuticals. So this is a cannabis company with a CBD gel pharmaceutical that's currently in the third stage of a test phase.
Look, this is a huge speculative stock. It's moved up gigantically. It's up 388%. It's not a blue chip. If you want a spec, I'm okay with it. But please understand, it is totally speculative. I don't want you to lose any money. A lot of people losing money here. I don't want to be a part of it. Let's go to John in Massachusetts. John!
Booyah, Jim.
Booyah.
John from Citroen, Massachusetts here. Go Patriots.
Go Patriots. Yeah, right in my face. Okay. Yeah, Patriots. Yeah. Hey, get your job done. Do your assignment. Win. Okay, there. I just did his coach. What's the stock? What? Lululemon? Oh, Lululemon. I'm a buyer of it here, and if it goes down, I'll buy more. End that. Ladies and gentlemen, up the Lightning Round!
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade.
How can we withstand the trade war with China and a possible slowdown in the U.S. economy, something that seems more likely with the benchmark 10-year Treasury currently yielding 2.41%. If you're worried that the expansion might be winding down, what is worth buying? All right, this is going to sound a little crazy, but how about the managed care stocks? This hated group has gotten some pep in its step lately, and I'm going to tell you why. Given the wholesale carnage in the sector last month, it seems odd. Remember, the managed care stocks got crushed because everyone was worried about the Democratic presidential candidates pushing for Medicare for All, something that would potentially put many of these companies out of business. When United Health Group reported mid-April, oh, it delivered some phenomenal numbers, yet the stock crashed. It crashed because of these fears. CEO David Wichmann came out on the conference call, and he did criticize those who favored the single-payer concept, saying that such a policy would destroy the quality health care that the system provides. Wichmann refers to status quo and said, quote, wholesale disruption of the American health care being discussed in some of the proposals would surely jeopardize the relationship people have with their doctors, destabilize the nation's health care system, and limit the ability of clinicians to practice medicine at their best, end quote. Needless to say, anyone who sells health insurance has every reason to oppose single payer, but this was not the right way to handle it. I think he should have said, never going to happen, and left it at that. But the conference call gave people a sense that single payer might be a real possibility. Put it on the It made it front and center, and the stock plummeted in response because people said, wow, if David Wichmann's worried about it, maybe we should be too. This previously defensive group of stocks then went into free fall. However, it didn't take long for UNH to start rallying again, seemingly on nothing. Although looking back, here's what happens, and it turned out to be obvious. Joe Biden announced he was running, and suddenly the frontrunner was an insurance-friendly former senator from Delaware. Unlike Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren or Kamala Harris, Biden's against Medicare for All. Overnight, it became safe to own the managed care stocks again. Don't worry, it's not too late. The political risk was most reduced. I think it was always more style than substance. You know why? Because the Democratic leadership in Congress, Nancy Pelosi, is also against single payer. They don't even want to talk about this stuff. But with Biden leading the polls, it's more obvious that the health insurance business will be just fine. Thank you. Look what's happened since then. As President Trump ratchets up tensions with China, the managed care cohort will be totally immune to the damage. They're entirely domestic. Whereas a group like the retailers, which are often a safe haven in times of international turmoil, is getting hit by the tariffs, and I do expect a series of bad retail numbers over the next 3 days, the managed care stocks have nothing to fear. What's the best one to own? Hey, David Wichmann's. My favorite's United Health. It's the biggest, and it's in many ways the best, and it keeps beating and raising quarters. Second, there's Centene, CNC, Michael Nardoff. It's been a huge winner from Obamacare, as they provide government-sponsored health care plans. Finally, down and out, you know I like CVS, which has been hammered endlessly as investors worry that Amazon is pillaging the front of the store while the pharmacy side has been pulled down by its merger that looks so smart for so long with Aetna. Hey, wait a second. Maybe Ed is back in style. CVS sports a bountiful 3.78% yield, and it's seven times next year's earnings. This thing used to sell at a premium. Seven times next year's earnings. It's the cheapest stock in the group. That's why we own both UNH and CVS for the Charitable Trust, which you can follow on by joining the ActionAlertsPlus.com club. Of course, Biden's frontrunner status is also good news for the pharmaceutical stocks and the hospital chains I recommend to you, HCA. More importantly, it's not too late to invest in these stocks because Trump keeps giving us more reasons to bail on companies with exposure to China and circle the wagons around the pure domestics like the ones I've just mentioned. I think you should use any weakness to do some
buy,
because this is now the group to own. Stick to it. I like Home Depot stock. Anecdotally, you know I'm a gardener. There has just been nothing but horrendous weather, and that will hurt the stock. If they say something negative, it might be a great opportunity to buy. Like I said, there's always a bull market somewhere. I promise I'll try to find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer, and I will see you tomorrow.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.